Hello, angels. It is me, Willow, and I am back with the third part of my reading of Madeline L'Engle's A Wrinkle in Time. I did as I said I would yesterday, and I updated my Safe for Work audio index on Reddit. So, if you haven't heard the first two parts, you can find them there, pinned on my Reddit profile. They'll be all the way down at the bottom because they're the most recent things I've done. You can also find them pinned in the media channel of my Discord server and on my Twitter if you're brave enough to scroll back. I'm going to be moving on to chapter 3. There's really not much to say. I'm in bed. I'm cozy. I actually had to turn my ring light on because it's kind of dark in here. I don't have a whole lot of water, but I'm only reading one chapter, so it should be okay. But anyway, we're gonna get going because I'm actually really, really enjoying the story already. As always, I'm asking you guys to have a little patience with me. This is not meant to be an audiobook. This is meant to sound like a friend reading to you. So have very low expectations of me, please. If you're looking for an audiobook quality, I would suggest actually listening to the professional recording. But otherwise, here we go. Chapter 3 of Madeline L'Engle's A Wrinkle in Time, titled Mrs. Witch. In the forest, evening was already beginning to fall, and they walked in silence. Charles and Fortinbras gambled on ahead. Calvin walked with Meg, his fingers barely touching her arm in a protective measure. "This has been the most impossible, the most confusing afternoon of my life," she thought. "Yet I don't feel confused or upset anymore. I only feel happy. Why?" "Maybe we weren't meant to meet before this," Calvin said. "Maybe I knew who you were in school and everything, but I didn't know you. I'm glad we've met now, Meg. We're going to be friends, you know." "I'm glad, too," Meg whispered, and they were silent again. When they got back to the house, Mrs. Murray was still in the lab. She was watching a pale blue fluid move slowly through a tube from beaker to a retort. Over a Bunsen burner bubbled a big, earthenware dish of stew. "Don't tell Sandy and Denny's I'm cooking out here," she said. "They're always suspicious that a few chemicals make it in with the meat, but I had an experiment I wanted to stay with." "This is Calvin O'Keefe, Mother," Meg said. "Is there enough for him, too? It smells super." "Hello, Calvin," Mrs. Murray shook hands with him. "Nice to meet you. We aren't having anything but stew tonight, but it's a good thick one."
"Sounds wonderful to me," Calvin said.
May I use your phone so Mother will know where I am?"
"Of course. Show him where it is, will you please, Meg? I won't ask you to use the one out here, if you don't mind. I'd like to finish up this experiment." Meg led the way into the house. Charles Wallace and Fortinbras had gone off. Outdoors, she could hear Sandy and Denny's hammering at the fort that they were building up in one of the maples.
"This way." Meg went through the kitchen and into the living room.
"I don't know why I call her when I don't come home," Calvin said, his voice bitter.
"She won't notice."
He sighed and dialed.
"Ma?"
he said.
"Oh, Hinky. Tell Ma I won't be home until late.
Now don't forget, I don't want to be locked out again."
He hung up and looked at Meg. "Do you know how lucky you are?"
She smiled rather wryly.
"Not most of the time."
"A mother like that, a house like this. Gee, your mother's gorgeous. You should see my mother. She had all her upper teeth out and Pop got her a plate, but she won't wear it. And most days she doesn't even comb her hair. Not that it makes much difference when she does." He clenched his fist.
"But I love her. That's the funny part of it.
I love them all. And they don't give a hoot about me. Maybe that's why I call when I'm not going to be home. Because I care. Nobody else does. You don't know how lucky you are to be loved."
Meg said in a startled way,
"I guess I never thought about that. Guess I just took it for granted."
Calvin looked somber. And then his enormous smile lit up his face again.
"Things are going to happen, Meg. Good things. I feel it."
He began wandering, still slowly, around the pleasant, if shabby, living room. He stopped before a picture on the piano of a small group of men standing together on a beach.
"Who's this?"
"Oh, a bunch of scientists."
"Where?"
Meg went over to the picture. "Cape Canaveral?"
"This one's father."
"Which?"
"Here."
"The one with the glasses?"
"Yeah, the one who needs a haircut."
Meg giggled, forgetting her worries and her pleasant showing at Calvin, and in her pleasure at showing Calvin the picture. "His hair is sort of the same color as mine, but he keeps forgetting to have it cut. Mother usually ends up doing it for him. She bought clippers and stuff, because he won't take the time to go out
and see a barber. Calvin studied the picture. I like him, he announced judiciously. Kinda looks like Charles Wallace, doesn't he? Meg laughed. When Charles was a baby, he looked exactly like father. It was really funny. Calvin continued to look at the picture. He's not handsome or anything, but I like him. Meg was indignant. He is too handsome. Calvin shook his head. Nah, he's tall and skinny like me. Well, I think you're handsome, Meg said. Father's eyes are kind of like yours too, you know. Really blue. Only you don't notice it as much because of the glasses. Where is he now? Meg stiffened, but she didn't have to answer because the door from the lab to the kitchen slammed, and Mrs. Murray came in carrying a dish of stew. Now, she called. I'll finish this up properly on the stove. Have you done your homework, Meg? Not quite, Meg said, going back to the kitchen. Then I'm sure Calvin won't mind if you finish before dinner. Sure, go ahead. Calvin fished in his pocket and pulled out a wad of folded paper. As a matter of fact, I have some junk of mine to finish up, too. Math. It's the only thing I have a hard time keeping up with. I'm okay on anything to do with words, but I don't do well with numbers. Mrs. Murray smiled. Why don't you get Meg to help you? But, see, I'm several grades above Meg. Try asking her to help you with your math anyhow, Mrs. Murray suggested. Well, sure, Calvin said. Here, but it's pretty complicated. Meg smoothed out the paper and studied it. Do they care how you do it? She asked. I mean, can you work it out in your own way? Well, sure, as long as I understand and get the answers right. Well, we have to do it their way. Now look, Calvin, don't you see how much easier it would be if we just did it this way? Her pencil flew over the paper. Hey, Calvin said. Hey, I think I get it. Show me once more on the other one. Again, Meg's pencil was busy. All you have to remember is that every ordinary fraction can be converted into an infinite periodic decimal fraction. See? So 3/7 is 0.428571. This is the craziest family, Calvin grinned at her. I suppose I should stop being surprised by now, but you're supposed to be dumb in school, always being called up on the carpet. Oh, I am. The trouble with Meg and math, Mrs. Murray said briskly, is that Meg and her father used to play with numbers, and Meg learned far too many shortcuts, so when they want her to do the problems the long way around at school, she gets sullen and stubborn and sets up a fine mental block for herself. Are there any more morons like Meg and Charles around? Calvin asked. If so, I should meet more of them. It might also help if Meg's handwriting were legible, Mrs. Murray said. With a good deal of difficulty, I can usually decipher it, but I doubt very much if her teachers can or are willing to take the time. I'm planning on giving her a typewriter for Christmas. Maybe that'll help. If I get anything right, nobody believes it's me, Meg said. What's a megaparsec? I don't know, Calvin asked. One of Father's nicknames for me, Meg said. It's also 3.26 million light years. What's E equals MC squared? Einstein's equation. What's E stand for? Energy. M? Mass. C squared? The square of the velocity of light in centimeters per second. By what countries is Peru bounded? I haven't the faintest idea. I think it's in South America somewhere. What's the capital of New York? Well, New York City, of course. Who wrote Boswell's Life of Johnson? Oh, Calvin, I'm not any good at English. Calvin groaned and turned to Mrs. Murray. See what I mean? Her I wouldn't want to teach. She's a little one-sided, I grant you, Mrs. Murray said. Though I blame her father and myself for that. She still enjoys playing dolls in her house, though. Mother! Meg shrieked in agony. Oh, darling, I'm sorry, Mrs. Murray said swiftly. But I'm sure Calvin understands what I mean. With a sudden enthusiastic gesture, Calvin flung his arms out wide as though he were embracing Meg and her mother and the whole house. How did all of this happen? Isn't it wonderful? I feel as though I were just being born. I'm not alone anymore. Do you realize what this means to me? But you're good at basketball and things, Meg protested. You're good in school. Everybody likes you. For all the most unimportant reasons, Calvin said. There hasn't been anybody in the world that I could talk to. Sure, I can function on the same level as everybody else. I can hold myself down, but it isn't me. Meg took a batch of forks from the drawer and turned them over and over, looking at them. I'm all confused again. So am I, Calvin said gaily.
But at least now, I know we're going somewhere. Meg was pleased and a little surprised when the twins were excited at having Calvin over for supper. They knew more about his athletic record and were far more impressed by that side than she was. Calvin ate 5 bowls of stew, 3 saucers of Jell-O, and a dozen cookies, and then Charles Wallace insisted that Calvin take him up to bed and roll him in. Oh, and read to him. That makes more sense. The twins, who had finished their homework, were allowed to watch 30 minutes of TV. Meg helped her mother with the dishes and sat at the table and struggled with her homework, but she couldn't concentrate. "Mother, are you upset?" she asked suddenly. Mrs. Murray looked up from the copy of English Scientific Magazine, which she had been leafing through. For a moment, she did not speak. Then, "Yes." "Why?" Again, Mrs. Murray paused. She held her hands out and looked at them. They were long and strong and beautiful. She touched with the fingers of her right hand the broad gold band on the 3rd finger of her left hand. "I'm still quite a young woman, you know," she said finally. "Though I realize that's difficult for you children to conceive, I'm still very much in love with your father. I miss him quite dreadfully." "And you think this all has something to do with father?"
"I think it must have."
"But what?"
"That I don't know. But it seems the only explanation."
"Do you think things always have to have an explanation?"
"Yes, I believe that they do.
But I think that our human limitations, we're not able to understand the explanations. But you see, Meg, just because we don't understand doesn't mean that the explanation doesn't exist."
"I like to understand things," Meg said.
"We all do, but it isn't always possible."
"Charles Wallace understands more than the rest of us, doesn't he?"
"Yes."
"Why?"
"I suppose because he's... well, he's different, Meg."
"Different how?"
"I'm not quite sure. You know yourself, he's not like anybody else."
"No, and I wouldn't want him to be," Meg said defensively. "Wanting doesn't have anything to do with it. Charles Wallace is what he is. Different.
New."
"New?"
"Yes, that's what your father and I feel." Meg twisted her pencil so hard that it broke. She laughed. "I'm sorry, I'm really not being destructive. I'm just trying to get things straight."
"I know."
"But Charles Wallace doesn't look different from anybody else."
"No, Meg, but people are more than just the way they look. Charles Wallace's difference isn't physical. It's in essence."
Meg sighed heavily, took off her glasses and twirled them, and then put them back on again. "Well, I know Charles Wallace is different, and I know he's something more. I guess I'll just have to accept it without understanding it." Mrs. Murray smiled at her. "Maybe that's really the point I was trying to put across."
"Yeah," Meg said dubiously.
Her mother smiled again. "Maybe that's why our visitor last night didn't surprise me. Maybe that's why I'm able to have a willing suspension of disbelief, because of Charles Wallace."
"Are you like Charles?" Meg asked.
"I? Heavens no. I'm blessed with more brains and opportunities than many people, but there's nothing about me that breaks out of the ordinary mold."
"Your looks do," Meg said.
Mrs. Murray laughed. "You just haven't had enough bias for comparison, Meg. I'm very ordinary, really." Calvin O'Keefe, coming in then, said, "Ha, ha."
"Charles all settled?" Mrs. Murray asked.
"Yes."
"What did you read to him?"
"Genesis. His choice. By the way, what kind of an experiment were you working on this afternoon, Mrs. Murray?"
"Oh, something my husband and I were cooking up together. I don't want to be too far behind him when he gets back."
"Mother," Meg pursued. "Charles says I'm not one thing or another. Not flesh, nor fowl, nor good red herring.
"Oh, for crying out loud," Calvin said. "You're Meg, aren't you?
Come on, let's go for a walk." But Meg was still not satisfied. "And what do you make of Calvin?" she demanded of her mother.
Mrs. Murray laughed. "I don't want to make anything of Calvin. I like him very much, and I'm delighted he's found his way here."
"Mother, you were going to tell me about a tesseract."
"Yes."
A troubled look came into Mrs. Murray's eyes. "But not now, Meg. Not now.
Go out for that walk with Calvin. I'm going to go up and kiss Charles, and then I have to see the twins get to bed."
Outdoors, the grass was wet with dew. The moon was halfway up and dimmed the stars for a great arc. Calvin reached out and took Meg's hand with a gesture as simple and friendly as Charles Wallace's.
"Were you upsetting your mother?"
he asked gently.
"I don't think I was, but she's upset."
"What about?"
"Father."
Calvin led Meg across the lawn. The shadows of the trees were long and twisted, and there was a heavy, sweet autumnal smell to the air.
Meg stumbled as the land sloped suddenly downhill, but Calvin's strong hand steadied her. They walked carefully across the twins' vegetable garden, picking their way through rows of cabbages, beets, broccoli, pumpkins. Looming on their left were tall stalks of corn. Ahead of them was a small apple orchard bounded by a stone wall, and beyond this the woods through which they had walked that afternoon. Calvin led the way to the wall and then sat there, his red hair shining silver in the moonlight, his body dappled with patterns from the tangle of branches. He reached up, pulled an apple off a gnarled limb and handed it to Meg, and then picked one for himself. "Tell me about your father."
"He's a physicist."
"Sure."
"We all know that. And he's supposed to have left your mother and gone off with some dame."
Meg jerked up from the stone on which she was perched, but Calvin grabbed her by the wrist and pulled her back down.
"Hold it, kid. I didn't say anything you hadn't already heard, did I?"
"No," Meg said, but continued to pull away.
"Let me go."
"Come on, calm down. You know it isn't true. I know it isn't true. And how anybody after one look at your mother could believe that any man would leave her for another woman just shows how far jealousy will make people go, right?"
"I guess so,"
Meg said, but her happiness had fled and she was back in a morass of anger and resentment.
"Look, dope," Calvin shook her gently. "I just want to get things straight. Sort out the fact from fiction. Your father's a physicist. That's a fact, right?"
"Yes."
"He's a PhD several times over."
"Yes."
"Most of the time he works alone, but sometimes he works for the Institute of Higher Learning in Princeton, correct?"
"Yes."
"Then he did some work for the government, didn't he?"
"Yes."
"You take it from there. That's all I know."
"That's all about I know, too," Meg said. "Maybe Mother knows more. I don't know. What he did was, well, they call it classified."
"Top secret, you mean?"
"That's right."
"And you don't even have any idea what it was about?"
Meg shook her head.
"No, not really. Just an idea, because where he was."
"Well, where?"
"Out in New Mexico for a while.
We were with him there, and then he was in Florida at Cape Canaveral, and we were with him there too. And then he was going to be traveling a lot, so we came here."
"You'd always have this house?"
"Yes, but we used to just live in it in the summer."
"And you don't know where your father was sent?"
"No, at first we got lots of letters. Mother and father always wrote each other every day. I think Mother still writes him every night. Every once in a while, the postmistress makes some sort of crack about all of her letters."
"I suppose they think she's pursuing him or something," Calvin said rather bitterly.
"They can't understand plain, ordinary love when they see it."
"Well, go on. What happened next?"
"Nothing happened," Meg said. "That's the trouble."
"Well, what about your father's letters?"
"They just stopped coming."
"You haven't heard anything at all?"
"No," Meg said. "Nothing."
Her voice was heavy with misery. Silence fell between them, as tangible as the dark tree shadows that fell across their laps, and that now seemed to rest upon them as heavily as though they possessed a measurable weight of their own. At last, Calvin spoke in a dry, unemotional voice, not looking at Meg.
"Do you think he could be dead?"
Again, Meg leaped up, and again Calvin pulled her down.
"No, they'd have told us if he were dead. There's always a telegram or something. They always tell you."
"What do they tell you?"
Meg choked down on a sob, but managed to speak over it.
"Oh, Calvin, Mother's tried and tried to find out. She's been down to Washington and everything, and all they say is that he's on a secret and dangerous mission, and she can be very proud of him, but he won't be able to communicate with us for a while, and they'll give us news soon. As soon as they have it."
"Meg, don't get mad. But do you think maybe they don't know?"
A slow tear trickled down Meg's cheek.
"That's what I'm afraid of."
"Why don't you cry?" Calvin asked gently.
"You're just crazy about your father, aren't you?
Go ahead and cry. It'll do you good."
Meg's voice came out, trembling over tears.
"I cry too much. I should be like Mother. I should be able to control myself."
"Your mother's a completely different person, and she's a lot older than you are."
"I wish I were a different person," Meg said shakily. "I hate myself."
Calvin reached over and took off her glasses. He pulled out a handkerchief from his pocket and wiped her tears. This gesture of tenderness undid her completely, and she put her head down on her knees and sobbed. Calvin sat quietly behind her, every once in a while patting her head.
"I'm sorry," she sobbed finally.
"I'm terribly sorry. Now you'll hate me."
"Oh, Meg, you are a moron,"
Calvin said.
Don't you know you're the nicest thing that's happened to me in a long time? Meg raised her head, and the moonlight shone on her tear-stained face. Without the glasses, her eyes were unexpectedly beautiful. If Charles Wallace is a sport, I think I'm a biological mistake. Moonlight flashed against her braces as she spoke. Now she was waiting to be contradicted, but Calvin said, Do you know that this is the first time that I've ever seen you without your glasses? I'm blind as a bat without them. I'm nearsighted like father. Well, you know what? You've got dreamboat eyes, Calvin said. Listen, you go right on wearing your glasses. I don't think I want anyone else to see what gorgeous eyes you have. Meg smiled with pleasure. She could feel herself blushing, and she wondered if the blush would be visible in the moonlight. Okay, hold it, you two, came a voice out of the moonlight. Charles Wallace quickly stepped into it. I wasn't spying on you, he said quickly. And I hate to break things up, but this is it, kids. This is it. His voice quivered with excitement. This is what? Calvin asked. We're going. Going? Where? Meg reached out and instinctively grabbed for Calvin's hand. I don't know exactly, Charles Wallace said, but I think it's to find father. Suddenly, two eyes seemed to spring up at them out of the darkness. It was the moonlight striking on Mrs. Hu's glasses. She was standing next to Charles Wallace, and how she had managed to appear where a moment ago there had been nothing but a flickering shadows of the moonlight, Meg had no idea. She heard a sound behind her and turned around. There was Mrs. Wetzet scrambling over the wall. My, but I wish there were no wind, Mrs. Wetzet said plainly. It's so difficult with all these clothes. She wore her outfit from the night before, rubber boots and all, with the addition of one of Mrs. Buncombe's sheets, which she had draped over herself. As she slid off the wall and the sheet caught on a low branch, it came off. The felt that had slipped over both eyes and another branch plucked at the pink sole. Oh, dear, she sighed. I shall never learn to manage. Mrs. Hu wafted over to her, tiny feet scarcely seeming to touch the ground, the lenses of her glasses glittering. Dante, she said. Like, there's parts in this that she's just not speaking in English, and I'm not doing that to myself. But please know that when I say something, she has said something in another language, and then the second thing she says is that in English. So, Dante, what grievous pain a little fault doth give thee. So I assume that was Latin. In a quote from Inferno. With claw-like hand, she pushed the hat up on Mrs. Wetzet's forehead, untangled the sole from a stole from the tree, and with a deft gesture took the sheet and folded it. Oh, thank you, Mrs. Wetzet said. You're so clever. A Perez. An old ass knows more than a young colt. Just because you're a paltry few billion years, Mrs. Wetzet was starting indignantly, when a sharp, strange voice cut in. All right, girls, this is no time for bickering. It's Mrs. Witch, Charles Wallace said. There was a faint gust of wind, and the leaves shivered in it. The patterns of moonlight shifted, and on a circle of silver something shimmered, quivered, and the voice said, I do not think I will materialize completely. I find it very tiring, and we have much to do. That's the end of chapter 3. And we'll stop there because I have other things I need to get on to. But thank you guys for listening. I love you all very much. Take care of each other. Take care of yourselves. Be kind. And for the love of God, get some sleep. Good night, angels.